Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us now is a federal prosecutor during the Carter and Reagan administrations, author most recently of The Woman Who Fought an Empire. Greg Wallins, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Ryan, thank you for having me.
You know, it's not often we have Sunday night guests, so thank you for taking some time away from your weekend to do this. And you're an opinion writer, and I've seen some of your work on the Hill. Most recently, you were talking about the GOP's response to Representative Steve King after some of his comments that came out. Do you want to give just maybe your thoughts, your background of what you wrote about that article? Maybe we can have a discussion about that.
Well, what led me to write the article was that in the same week, Representative Steve King asked a question, and the question was, how come white supremacy has such a bad name? Mm-hmm. And that same week, Donald Trump tweeted a column by Pat Buchanan, the former communications director of President Reagan, mm-hmm. lamenting the loss of white dominance in America. Now, how did the Republicans react? Well, they punished Steve King, and they ignored Donald Trump. And what it really illustrates, hypocrisy, for sure. It was really a hypocritical response. But I think what it really, really illustrates is the what I would call the stain on the Republican Party from Donald Trump and their unwillingness to do anything to wipe it away.
You know,
and Trump has had a long history of comments and retweets that are racially offensive. And again, the Republicans just don't want to deal with it, and they're going to pay a price in the judgment of history for this.
So if you look at the comments from Representative Steve King, and it was almost immediate where the after the quotes and the interview came out that people were immediately saying, you know, I'm going to separate myself from that. So when you say something like white supremacy or white supremacist, and you throw that out there, do you see that different from the point that Buchanan was making, or do you see that on the same level?
I see it on exactly the same level. What Buchanan said was, America as we have known it is going to cease to exist. The Democratic Party is hostile to white men because the smaller the share of the U.S. population that white men have, the more they can control. So King is saying, How did white supremacy get such a bad name? And Trump is retweeting to 50 million followers a columnist saying or lamenting the loss of white supremacy. I don't see the distinction.
Yeah,
I think they're both morally repugnant.
Yeah, I think that race shouldn't really factor into ideas. I think it's a lot better to maybe look at certain policies that you disagree with and talk about why you disagree with it, but I feel like we associate so many different ideological stances with a person's race, and to me, that is something that we've made a mistake of for a long time.
I couldn't agree more. I think race, white supremacy, white nationalism, though, just shouldn't be part of a dialogue in America, at least at any mainstream level.
Mm-hmm.
That was really something that the whole racial history of this country has been one of sheer agony,
mm-hmm.
and tremendous, tremendous sacrifice and suffering from the Civil War through Jim Crow, the lynchings, civil rights movement to the day. And the notion that someone could think that a white supremacy, you know, shouldn't have a bad name, or that the President of the United States should retweet a column openly appealing to white supremacist instincts is very sad, and I hope that it comes to an end.
Joining us
now. The sooner
now,
the better.
Oh, sorry. Joining us now is someone that you can see on the Hill, some opinion pieces that are up there. One of the most recent, GOP can't excommunicate King, ignore Trump playing to white supremacy and racism. Gregory Wallace, thank you so much again for coming on. So I wanted to mention this. With Stephen King, the way that they used to censure him and not decide to find a way to remove him from his seat or, I guess, encourage him to step down, do you think that was the right approach, or do you think that there should have been more pressure to get him to step down?
Well, I think removing a congressman who's been elected from his district is a fraught step to take. But I think the Republicans could have done more. They have the power to censure, to pass a formal censure resolution. I think they should have done that. It would have certainly sent a stronger message. Stripping him of his committee assignments and suggesting, well, Steve, you might have a future elsewhere, which one congresswoman has done, I don't think that really is the right punishment.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of the worries I have with that is I get worried that too often we use a lot of social media outrage and we apply it in a way very hastily. And we use that as a way to try to, as fast as we can, oust someone from a position they're in. So I feel like the last thing you want to do is try to not go through proper procedure, and then we purposely try to push things too quickly, and then we have this. It's almost like there's some conservative speakers like Ben Shapiro, and he's talked about how when he goes to a campus, and they almost call it like a veto power. So if there's enough protesters that show up, it vetoes his ability to have free speech. That's what I'm worried about sometimes too in politics. That even though you say something stupid and you do something, as long as, you know, and generally speaking, if you use terms like white supremacists and, you know, you believe those sort of things, the thing I worry about the most is he does have free speech. If you're going to go out and you're going to say we're going to kick someone out of office for something they said, even if it was stupid, that's a terrible precedent to set.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't want to suggest that the intolerance is limited to the Republicans or to conservatives. And what's taking place on college campuses, where speakers are invited or disinvited because they have views that, while they may be something you strongly disagree with, they aren't at the fringe level that justifies refusing to let any student listen to them and debate them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate. And we are, you know, look, I'm going to say something that has been said umpteen times, but it's the divisiveness, the corrosiveness in this country, that we have to find a way to address. Otherwise, it's going to get worse and worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And no, that's it is getting worse. That's a part of the problem. I think that we try to, in the case of politics, I mean, it would be really easy to disenfranchise all these people that voted just by having some uproar and people signing petitions and things when there wasn't maybe a crime that was committed. I mean, that there is a, you know, proper measures to go through certain procedures if there were warranting to get someone out. And yeah, the college campus, you start to see some of those things happening where they make it so it's very difficult for people to maybe speak on their campus. I saw something in Oklahoma just recently where they wanted to start making the teachers who are picketing or protesting to pay $50,000 deposit in order to protest. Did you see that story?
I didn't. It's that's got some serious First Amendment.
Terribly. Yeah. So they're trying to say that because of the trash that's generated and the extra security that's needed in order to allow them to lawfully protest, they wanted to put a $50,000 deposit down. I thought, you can't do that. Of course you can't take away someone's right to protest. And that's how you would do it. You just make it so they can't afford to protest. You know, that's totally unconstitutional. So that's why you got to be careful on some of these cases, even though it seems in some cases you would think, oh, it's black and white. You know, it's this person said something terrible, so they have to go. Or this person, they litter too much, so they have to pay a $50,000 fine. Well, no, it doesn't really work that way. We're going to continue our conversation with Greg Wallace. You may have seen his work on The Hill. He writes opinion pieces there. Also has a book out, author of The Woman Who Fought an Empire. I want to look at immigration policy, maybe some of the other issues that he sees facing this nation, coming up on Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. There was an article in The Hill by Greg Wallens, Gregory J. Wallens. GOP can't excommunicate King and ignore Trump playing to white supremacy and racism. Well, I disagreed with the article, and we actually had a chance to have a civil discussion about it. I wanted to continue our conversation on some of the other issues. This is changing topics, but I wanted to talk to you about the immigration policy. President Trump had an address on Saturday. It was a daytime address where he was looking for some compromise when it comes to our border security. It seems like he's going to the path to citizenship, something they talked about early in his presidency. Let me first get your impressions on what you think about the compromise the president laid out, and if you think maybe the Democrats will take it.
I think under other circumstances, it could be the basis for negotiation, because he was including, well, three years is too short, a three-year deferral of any action regarding the Dreamers, that is, trying to kick them out of the country. Mm-hmm. And he was offering the Democrats more immigration judges at the border, which are terribly needed. And he made some noises about, well, it doesn't have to be a wall, you know, right across the United States, and we're talking about where it's effective and so on. But here's the problem. I think that both sides have backed themselves into a corner. They violated what I regard as an important principle of negotiation, which is not, and certainly not at the outset, to draw hard and fast lines. And so for Trump, the wall has become a hard and fast line. At least he's so fearful of losing his base that he cannot, as far as we can tell, back off mm-hmm. on it. And the Democrats made an equivalent mistake when they claimed that the wall is immoral. Because once they concede a little ground, well, maybe there might be room for 50 miles of new wall in the right location where it might do some good. Right away, they're doing something by their standard is immoral. And so both sides have gotten themselves into a fix. But, you know, yes, I think the Democrats should be pushing and testing behind the scenes. It doesn't have to be done in public to see what kind of flexibility Trump has. Would he be willing to take 25 or 50 miles of a wall and drop it after that? Would he, if he can't get to a permanent resident status for the Dreamers and some of the others who might be affected by this, well, what about getting 6 years? And maybe by then we'll have a Democratic president and or Democratic Congress that can do something about the Dreamers. I think the risk that both sides take and not trying to engage in a serious negotiation is that while the Democrats, I read, are ahead in the polls right now on this issue, the American people are getting increasingly impatient, and if they get angry, there's no way to predict who they're going to blame, and they may end up blaming both sides.
Hmm. You know, when I look at the 3 years, I look at some of the backlog they have when it comes to even people that are waiting for a date to that have been claiming amnesty or whatever it may be at the border. And so it's like 5 to 6 year process in most cases. And I think there's no way, if you're to look at the individual cases of the people that applied for Dreamer status, that you would even be able to get to their case, it seems like, in that short of time, 3 years. So unless they really beef up. And he talked about putting more judges at the border. I think when it comes to the border security, border wall, I think that unless you had some sort of better areas, and you can take San Diego as an example and say, even though that didn't fully eradicate the people that were trying to enter the country illegally, or at least, you know, use that as their entry, it did greatly diminish the flow that were coming through that area. So there are certain areas that need attention. You know, $5 or $6 billion could address some of those areas. Well, but it, to me, it's useless unless you get more judges there in trying to expedite the experience for the people that are trying to enter legally, because, you know, waiting 6 years is insane. Plus, you know, it's impossible to track people if they don't want to come back and go all the way through the court process. Even if they go to the initial court case, the likelihood of them following all the way through and when the judge makes a determination at the end is very slim. So there's got to be more there.
I agree, Ryan. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, right now, I'm not certain how many people appreciate it. We have 600 to 700 miles of wall on the border. Mm-hmm. Much of it is in urban areas where it really is effective, like San Diego. And maybe there's room don't think it has to be this no wall, not one inch. There may be some areas where additional fencing, vehicle bollards to keep vehicles from going through, maybe some of the money Trump wants can be spent on improving the existing walls. It ought to not be such a black and white issue that you can't compromise. That said, I don't like the idea of some sort of medieval barrier, you know, topped with barbed wire, stretching from one end of the southern border to the other end. I think Nancy Pelosi got it right when she said, "I want the symbol of America to be the Statue of Liberty, not the not a wall." But there's doesn't mean you can't negotiate, you can't compromise, you can't come up with something. But I'm not certain that President Trump can accept anything less than a full, end-to-end wall, because he got himself into a situation where his own base will be furious with him if he comes up with anything less than the full, 15-foot, whatever it's going to be, 6 feet, 8 feet deep, all the way from the Pacific to the Gulf of Mexico. Mm-hmm. That is where we may get stuck. Is his inflexibility. Maybe, I wonder whether the Democrats shouldn't be negotiating with Fox and Friends and Ann Coulter, because they seem to have as much sway over this as anyone.
Hmm. Yeah, I think, too, the wall, and if you look at a barrier and they try to interchange them, and, they change the terminology once one gets too hot or whatever it is. But I also think that some of the relaxed immigration policy that we may have seen over the past decade may have emboldened a lot of people to try to enter the country legally. You heard about the people that are working border security, and they hear almost a script. And then when they try to make some little changes, they adapt to those changes to try to use that as a way to still enter the country, even if they aren't claiming amnesty or whatnot. So I think maybe something like this could send a message. Maybe the message we were sending before was that you don't actually have to go through the process to become a citizen. You just have to, follow the checklist, and then you can sneak your way in. I think that if we can try to get some order, and I think there are some ways you can do that with the southern border, but you can put some order back into the process and change the immigration policy where it's allowing for people to come into the country illegally, and that's the process and the way they want to take, because they know there's a way for them to enter that way.
I think it's an important point, and there are actually studies that have been done that have demonstrated that the more people feel secure in their own lives and also in the security of their country, the more open they are to legal immigration. And I don't think Democrats get it, that there's going to have to be some border security, some sense beyond what we currently have of control of the borders, if we're going to keep legal immigration part of the American fabric. And it's a very, very important part of that fabric. My mother came through Ellis Island when she was 4 years old. So to me, it's very personal. And the stories she told, and she remembered the wails of the people that were sent back. And it made an impression on her that she never forgot. And that is so much part of the American story that we have to be careful we don't lose it.
Mm-hmm. Greg Wallace, if people want to read some of your work or maybe check out your book that's out, The Woman Who Fought an Empire, where can people find you?
Amazon, they can get it. And then go to my website, www.gregorywallace.com, which talks about that book, the other three books I wrote, and has all my opinion pieces.
When I was reading some of your articles, I could read some of these things and I can disagree, and you put a really good point together. I wanted to give you credit because you always put the full quote in context. I don't normally see that in opinion pieces. Oh. So I wanted to give you a lot of credit for doing that. But just having a discussion like this, it goes to show you people can have civil discussions over ideas. It seems like if you watch just the networks, you barely see that anymore.
That's awful. Just awful.
Greg Wallace, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
Ryan, thanks for having me.
It was fun, so you can go check that interview out. We'll post it online a little bit later throughout the night, but if you want to go read his articles, you can, even though I don't agree with them. I thought that was a good conversation. What I've noticed is that when the media does get it wrong, and we saw two very clear examples of how they got it wrong, very, very clear, with this BuzzFeed article that posted on Thursday night, then on Saturday at the March for Life between high school kids and a Native American group. Two very, very wrong approaches. And though they may tuck their tail between their legs, they are terrible at apologizing. So I want to talk about that coming up on Overnight America, KMOX. Oh, boy. Welcome back to Overnight America. That moon, man. Is the moon done? Is that only just a quick little deal? Man, the way our studio is situated, when I look out the window here at KMOX, right in the corner of Olive and Tucker, so I think we're looking west. So, yeah, that would be Olive right there. So we'd be looking west. And really, I try to catch a glimpse of the moon when it starts to pass over our building and start heading that way. But I can't see anything anymore. I don't know. Crazy. Well, what can you do? Missed out on the red moon, but I've seen enough photos online to realize that I don't know if it was worth the cold. I really tried to check it out ahead of time, but could not. Okay, there's a couple of things. In the media, I don't know. You start to wonder and you scratch your head and you say, is it intentional? If they see something that could be a shot at Donald Trump, it doesn't matter if it's factual. It doesn't matter if it's been vetted. They're just going to run with it. And you know what? There was two prime examples with this BuzzFeed report. And now what happened at the March for Life that was in Washington, D.C. How about we do the march first? And if you saw this video, let me open up the phone lines to you at 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. There's a couple of different things I want to read. I want to read one from the New York Times and one from the Detroit Free Press because the person involved here, the Native American advocate Nathan Phillips, who was banging on the drum, was from Ypsilanti. So he was interviewed by the Detroit Free Press and he gave his account of what happened. I read his account and I thought it was a somewhat fair account. I thought that he filled in some details that, you know what, he could have brought to the front line a little bit quicker when everyone was trying to crucify this poor kid. So let's go out and I'll give you an account of what I saw happening in this video. So on Saturday, there was a picture of a video. I guess there was a picture that came out, but there was also a videotape encounter between a Native American man and a bunch of high school students. Some of the high school students were wearing Make America Great Again hats. The Native American was playing on a drum and singing a song. So all we saw was this man that was singing the song and on one side of the video, and on the other side of the video, we see a teenager, probably about 16 or 17, with a smile on his face as this person is singing, and there's a bunch of high school students behind him too. A lot of people have their phones out and they're recording. And they look at this and they say, oh, that smug look on that kid's face. This is what racism looks like. This is what Donald Trump supporters do when they put on the red hats. This is this and this is that. They make him look out to be the most vile, racist, terrible human being ever to walk this planet, at least in 2019, because you know they'll come up with someone worse here soon enough. And as the internet saw this video, none of them actually cared to put this into perspective. And they all ran with their own speculation and details, and they all came to their own wrong assumption on this, to the point where these kids that were there are getting doxxed by celebrities, and there are people calling to kill them. They want to physically harm them and their families and their friends. That's how the internet has taken this. A fuller picture emerges of the viral video between the Native American man and the Catholic students. That was the headline from the New York Times. Keep in mind, when they wrote the headlines from this initially, it wasn't nearly as pleasant as the headline they wrote. And I don't even count this as a retraction. In fact, they should be ashamed if they think that headline is enough to try to grab people's attention in order to, I don't know, maybe apologize. Maybe the New York Times should be saying something a little bit different. Maybe the New York Times shouldn't be saying, Fuller picture emerges a viral video between Native American man and Catholic students. Maybe the picture should be, full video release shows that, well, I don't know. I don't want to put it my own words into the New York Times. But you know what there, you know what should be there? It should say, shows they were wrong about the initial confrontation. It should say the New York Times and all the people that reported this online were wrong. They jumped to this conclusion and it was the wrong conclusion. And when you jump to a wrong conclusion that causes people to get death threats for you and your family, then you're really wrong. Really, really wrong. So as more people started to upload what happened here, and it wasn't this little curated style video, it wasn't this little clip where it shows the kids smiling, we find that there was a couple of different groups involved, and we find that things weren't necessarily de-escalating that quick. There was a group of high school students that were there for the March on Life, and then there was another group called the Hebrew Israelites. They are a fascinating group. The group itself is pretty confrontational. So they'll go around, and when I say Hebrew Israelites, it's mostly African-American men. I didn't really see any women there. And what they do is they just go out, and they're kind of like Westboro Baptist Church in the way that they confront people, and they try to give their opinions on social matters that way, okay? So they're yelling and screaming at a bunch of high school students. Now, keep in mind, some of these high school students were indeed black, and they were, you know, saying, you know, how could you abandon your race, and how could you this and that, and da, 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 da. But it was a lot more vile than that, okay? According to the Free Press, when they interviewed the Native American group that was there, and Nathan Phillips is the person that's behind all of this, he said he saw that, and he started to step in because he saw things were escalating. One thing he said in the Free Press article that he's 100% right about, the chaperones and adults that were traveling with those kids at some point should have stepped in and put a barrier between those kids, because they're kids, even though if they're teenagers, 15, 16, 17, they're still kids, in the adults that were harassing them. They should have physically created a barrier to stop that from happening, but they didn't. So this Native American advocate, Nathan Phillips, comes with his drum, starts playing, and he freely walks up to them and walks up and down the line of the students who are standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. They were standing there stationary, okay? They weren't surrounding anyone. They were there stationary. He goes up and he bangs on the drum, sings, and goes up and down to, I don't know if he was trying to chastise the kids. It wasn't the right atmosphere for any of this stuff to be happening because everything was escalating. And as he was going up and down the line, he eventually stops at the middle of the pack, and it just so happens this one kid's standing there, and he's just watching. As he was banging on the drum and singing, the Nathan Phillips, the kid was watching back and smiling. Okay? Let me put this into perspective. If someone is non-confrontational and they hate this sort of thing, they don't like people confronting them, what's the one natural thing anyone, especially a teenager or a child, will do if they don't know what to do? They'll freeze. 100% of the time, they'll freeze. What did this kid do? He freezed. He didn't know what to do because, you know, he's part of this group, and then this other person comes up and starts banging a drum right in front of him and singing. And the video only shows that one portion, as if this guy was trying to egg this person on, as if this guy was trying to yell and scream and say racial things or whatever it was. Some of the things that were reported that were completely wrong, the video, some people have pointed out in the video, they weren't chanting build the wall. People were saying that they were trying to aggravate the other groups. Didn't see any evidence on that when you watch the full videos. When you watch their faces and you look at everything else that goes with it, this is just basically high school kids that should have had a parent step in and say, all right, this is getting a little bit out of hand. It's time to, you know, back off. But instead, they just stood their ground and watched. The Hebrew Israelite activist shouted insults at the Native Americans, but for some reason that gets left out. Other activists were posting stuff on Facebook, and when I say there were some pretty nasty things that they were saying, there were some pretty nasty things that we couldn't air on these airwaves. What I'm saying is there was only one specific thing that everyone grabbed onto. They saw something they can sensationalize. They latched onto it. And as a result, for being dishonest in the way that they were portraying what happened there, they are probably going to ruin this kid's life. And they owe him an apology, a huge one. And unfortunately, the only way that they could de-escalate this mob that's going online is for them to say they were sorry and they retract what they said, but they are not doing that. They are not doing that. Let me do just a quick call real quick from Daryl, who's calling in. Hey, Daryl, what's going on?
Hey, Ricker, thanks for taking my call, man.
Sure.
Just to give you a reference for you, I sent you a link on your Twitter to a VW Beetle sounding like the chirping noise from the Jets.
No, you did not. Let me go see if I can find it. I'll check it during the break.
A few days ago. Shockingly enough, I know you are kind of hip to what goes on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And you will never guess who else got this story wrong. A guy that is generally pretty fair and balanced.
Oh, well, I know. Let me guess. Can I guess? Ben Shapiro. Sure.
No.
Oh, because...
Philip DeFranco.
Who did Philip DeFranco?
Philip DeFranco took the side of the Washington Post and Nathan Phillips.
Oh, boy. Has he posted any comment on his jumping the gun?
I didn't have a chance to, but I saw some other people coming on his video going, Phil, you got this way wrong, buddy.
Yeah.
It's shocking because Philip DeFranco is always the guy that says, everyone exhale and wait for the facts to come out. And he didn't do it this time.
Hmm.
He screwed up and he jumped the gun.
I'll check it out.
He's coming down solely on the side of the Nathan Phillips guy.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check it out. I'm not a huge Philip DeFranco fan myself, but... you know, I know who he is. I know he does those daily news updates, but I think he reaches a lot of people. He tries to put himself as unbiased as possible, and he normally does for news.
There is some slant from time to time, but generally he's pretty good about getting it right.
Yeah. Okay.
Step now.
I'll do it. Thanks, Daryl. Bye.
See you, man.
Now, Philip DeFranco, when it comes to online personalities, he is one of the largest and most respected in that YouTube community circle. So he is someone that holds a lot of influence when it comes to the platform itself. So that's fine. That's just interesting. You know, Ben Shapiro retweeted someone that was jumping the gun, too. There's been a lot of apologies of people who said they got this wrong. Unfortunately, it's not coming from the media. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. That first number, if you want to text in, you can. It's Overnight America, KMOX. All right, here we go. Overnight America. I'm our last caller. I couldn't find that video. So are you sure you sent it to me? The one where the bug sounds like the Jetson car? Resend it when you get a moment, at Ryan Recker on Twitter. Make sure you got it to the right account, because I do want to see it, and I tried to scroll back, and I didn't see anything posted on there. All right, so here's the article. I saw people posting this, and Austin Peterson, someone I enjoy, was posting up an article to this on Twitter. It says, you got duped into being outraged. This wasn't that bad. And the person that wrote this article from The Libertarian said... Court of public opinion exploded on social media when a group of students from the Kentucky Covington Catholic High School mocked Native American Nathan Phillips, who was drumming, surrounding him, and blocking his path while shouting, build the wall. But did any of this actually happen? Well, once the full video comes out, they realize that maybe none of this happened. So the short clip shown above spread through social media. That's the one that everyone was reacting to, knee-jerk reaction, celebrities included, and some people, even verified celebrities online, were calling not only for the doxing, but for the killing and harming of him and his family, for the people that were in this video. All this kid did, he was on the steps, and he had a smug look on his face, smiling, when the one Native American, Nathan Phillips, walked up and started drumming in front of him. It's an obvious look of someone that is uncomfortable and doesn't know what to do. He just froze, and he stood there and just waited for this person to leave, and he didn't. So it appears the narrative that's been spreading around social media is completely wrong. Now this kid's life is in danger for all the threatening things that are being sent to him. He has to worry about a lot in his life. This shouldn't be one of them. This shouldn't be it. So it turns out the students did not approach or surround Phillips. Phillips went to them on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, okay? And at the time, the students were rowdy and singing their school spirit song.
It's also worth noting that Phillips was not surrounded, and he had his entire crowd behind him and around him, too. So basically, he took his group and went and walked to the group of high school students who were stationary on this steps of the Lincoln Memorial. The face of the kids standing up drew the outrage. The kid, however, likely was the most innocent party present, because now he is the face for what people look at as vile hatred in this country. And it's completely unfair the way he's been pegged. Completely unfair. It got awkward, though, when Phillips stopped in front of the kid and pounded his drum in the kid's face. This is despite the fact that there were actually plenty of room to keep moving. It's not like they surrounded him. The smirking observed in the shortened clip signifies the awkwardness. I agree. It says, despite it being represented over and over that these kids were shouting, build the wall, there's actually no evidence of this. This is present in all of the videos, including the 9-minute video that went and documented this whole encounter. Yeah, 9 minutes. Rather, you can hear members of the Native American Party telling the high school students to go back to Europe. Here's some reaction online, too. Once they realized they got this wrong, one person wrote, Attorney Robert Barnes, I will represent pro-life Catholic children for free if they sue the New York Times. It's probably not a bad idea for them to consider doing something like this. For as bad as this is, let them hit some headlines showing that they're fighting back for the New York Times trying to ruin their lives and all these other major news outlets that decided to smear them through their reporting that didn't show the whole story. In fact, they purposely took an online viral video and said, oh yeah, that's everything we need to know. Let's try to ruin this kid's life over it. It's ridiculous. Charlie Kirk wrote, I just watched the unedited video of the high school kids at the march. They did nothing wrong, and I correct an earlier tweet that left intentionally misreported the facts to destroy those kids' lives, to blame it on Trump. Media made this a top story to wreck lives. Another big point of this is, since the kids were wearing Make America Great Again hats, some of them had the red caps on, they made this into, this is what the Trump youth look like, as, you know, reference to Hitler youth. So here's the Trump youth. And they did this over and over and over again because they can't stand Donald Trump. They got to drag these kids into it. And once we see the full video, we find out that it's really, really unfair the way that they were treated. Paul Watson, if you spend the day inciting hate against and trying to ruin the lives of some teenagers for the crime of wearing Make America Great Again hats and still think you have a moral high ground, you're pretty much beyond redemption. One person wrote, shame on every never Trump conservative that threw the Covington Catholic High School kids under the bus before the facts came out because these kids wore MAGA hats. That was John Cardillo. Here's another one from Andrew Serbian. Well, let me point out, too, there was a representative in Kentucky that said that they need to, let me see if I got this tweet still up. It was so stupid what he pointed out, but it was something along the lines of, we need to ban any kid from wearing these hats because as soon as you put it on, you're a racist or whatever it was. And the thing is, he said, oh, it was tongue-in-cheek, but he put it as part of a two-point tweet that also continues to point out the fact that it doesn't really seem like he's all that joking. Andrew Serbian, having watched the entire unedited video, it backs up the student's claim 100%. I truly can't recall a more shameful case of media misrepresentation in my life. These kids' lives could be ruined based on provable falsehoods, but does that matter to the media and online mob? No. They're so right about all of this. Let's see. What the media did to those boys is way worse than BuzzFeed's article about Trump. Trump can take the blows. These are kids, and their families are now hiding because of fake news and lies. Here's one. Will Chamberlain prejudged them because they were white, because they were young men, because they were Catholic, because some of them were Trump supporters. We have a word for prejudging people based on those characteristics: bigotry. And there's a lot of people that are sounding off on this, and some of them are even saying, I got it wrong at first. I saw this, and I said, there's no room for what happened here. But now you know, when you take just a little part of a video, not even doctored, it's just taking it out of context, it completely changes what actually happened there. And anyone that has failed that went out and condemned these kids, and anyone that has failed to apologize, and not just apologize, but fully take back everything they said, is just shame on these guys. Shame on anyone online that have called for any of these kids to feel like their lives should be in danger for this. It's unbelievable. You know, I didn't even get to the BuzzFeed thing. Maybe I'll get a chance to do that. I spent a lot of time in my blog this week talking about what happened there at the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. If you want to get that, it should post online about 10 o'clock this morning at KMOX.com. Also coming up, I wanted to do some Tell Me Something Goods. I got a lot of good things to report. I hope you do too. And some cars up for auction. Who in their right mind needs a 700 horsepower Mustang? Seriously. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.